This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And congratulations, you didn't sell off your investments in the stock market. And as if to reward your faith in the long view, the market appeared to be stabilizing today. It even flirted with serious positive ground. But then the Fed released a statement in an effort to calm investor jitters.
The Fed said it would keep interest rates low through mid-2013, but it also acknowledged the economy is weaker than previously believed. That's caused more market nervousness, and the Dow is flirting now with negative territory.
But so far, nothing like yesterday, when the Dow dropped more than 600 points.
And a brutal day for the markets once again. And nothing really escaped the selling today.
Financials, as well as the Russell 2000, all in bear market territory, meaning they're down 20%.
But in the end, is it really about S&P, or is it that the economy just doesn't seem to be on stable footing?
And why is that man yelling?
Irrational exuberance or something?
Or rational hysteria, maybe.
Well, anyway, yesterday's market decline followed Standard & Poor's decision to downgrade the United States credit rating. Investors are also nervous that the country could be slipping back into recession and about the growing debt crisis in Europe.
So all that uncertainty and investor nervousness is fueling these vertiginous ups and downs on Wall Street, which leads to our question today. What should the average investor do? And by that we mean, what should normal people trying to plan for retirement or maybe figure out how to pay for your kids' college, what should they do?
Should you sell off your 401k investments or move your nest egg into T-bills? Or should you just tune out all the hysteria, hold firm, and embrace the conventional wisdom that in the long run, the stock market is still a smart bet?
Well, today we're talking to two investment experts with very different opinions about this, and we want to hear from you. Where are you investing your money these days, your retirement savings? And what questions do you have about all of this? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And joining us here in the studio is V. Bode. He's professor of finance and economics at Boston University School of Management. He's also author of the upcoming book, Risk Less and Prosper, Your Guide to Safer Investing. V. Bode, welcome to Radio Boston.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Also here in the studio is Cheryl Costa. She's managing director for AFW Wealth Advisors in Framingham. Cheryl Costa, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here as well.
And let me start with you, Cheryl. And we're casting you a little bit as the advocate of the conventional wisdom. On Boston.com, you blog today, for most people, selling is absolutely the wrong thing to do. Your advice, don't panic, hold tight, and turn off the TV. Say more about that.
Absolutely. We actually didn't field all that many calls from worried clients yesterday, a small handful, but by and large, not a large number. And I might fall firmly in the camp of turning off the TV, going outside, walk around the block. Just don't fall into the hysteria, because panic and fear was really the only thing driving the market yesterday. And people that sell newspapers and magazines and airtime know that fear sells. And that's frankly the angle they pursue. And it's hard to sit in front of the TV, watch that, and not feel as though you have to take some action. But our recommendation is, you know, by and large, for most people, hold firm and do not let the hysteria take over.
It sounds like sage advice. On the other hand, it seems like the only thing that drives the market is panic and emotion and fear. So I guess my question, as a sort of, you know, someone who wants to be a thoughtful investor, how do you ignore that? I mean, it seems like if you ignore it, you're ignoring the reality of the market.
Fear is definitely one of the factors, but you have to step aside. You have to be more rational. There's a lot of positive things to look at in the market. It's hard to see those positive things when you're seeing all the negative news, but there are certainly positive indications there. And my point is, you just need to make an informed decision based on facts and as much information as you can possibly garner. And you would be looking at corporate earnings, things along those lines. Last week when they had the employment numbers come out, those were actually better than many people had expected. So you have to look at the facts and then try and be as rational as possible.
Now, Zvi Bode, let me come over to you. You've been arguing for some time that for the average investor, the stock market is not a good risk. I'm gathering we could look at what's happened in the last couple of days as evidence of that.
Right. So, first of all, what I've been arguing is not that the stock market is not a good risk, but that people are misinformed about the risk of the stock market. people are told in one form or another that in the long run, stocks aren't really risky.
That if you stick it out over the long term,
you're
going to
earn
okay.
a risk premium for sure. And that's complete nonsense. I mean, you don't have to be a genius in finance to realize that there's a contradiction there. Because the reason economists and investment experts say you should be investing in stocks is to earn a risk premium. That is to say, an expected return that's higher than what you can earn on treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a reward for bearing risk. If you're not taking risk, in other words, if it is truly the case that in the long run it isn't risky, how could you be earning a risk premium?
But what do you mean by a risk premium? And aren't we just talking about a return on investment in the stock?
Very simply, let me put it into numbers.
Sure.
Okay? Roughly speaking, right now, if you invest in Treasury inflation-protected bonds of one sort or another, you're just going to be keeping up with inflation.
Right.
That is to say, you're not going to be beating inflation, but you're not going to be falling behind. Okay, it depends what maturity you're talking about. But so to a first approximation, you're just going to be keeping up with inflation safely, okay, without any worry. I call it worry-free investing. Now, and that's despite the downgrade by S&P, which I consider kind of irrelevant to most people.
Sure.
The risk premium is the 5 or 6% that you're supposed to earn per year. I mean, some people would say 10%. Some of the pension funds around the country are assuming 8%, right, by which you're going to beat inflation.
Right.
Okay? Well, that's only by taking significant risk. And that risk is not any lower in the long term, let's say a 30-year horizon, than it is over the next year. In fact, in many ways, the long-term risk is greater than the short-term risk.
So what would you recommend instead?
Well, what I recommend is, first of all, I don't recommend anything without knowing a lot about the person.
Hmm.
Okay, everything depends, for most ordinary people, on how secure you are about your future earning power, your health, your marital situation, all of those things, and what your basic needs are. My fundamental philosophy is make sure that your basic needs are covered by some combination of insurance, like health insurance and so forth, and a cushion of saving, which my cushion is very, very big because I include retirement in my cushion. The ability, you know, to
sure.
retire if I have to late in my later years.
Listeners, we're discussing investments after yesterday's unsettling stock market drop. What should the average investor do with his or her money? That's what we're talking about right now. You can give us a call, 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. With us in the studio is V. Bode. He's professor of finance and economics at BU. And Cheryl Costa, managing director for AFW Wealth Advisors in Framingham. Cheryl Costa, respond to V. Bode, the idea that this risk that the stock market represents is just, it's not a good risk for a lot of people.
I don't think that V and I necessarily disagree. I think it's very important that people that have an equity tilt to their portfolio or a focus on equity fully understand what it is that they're biting off when they invest in that way. And there is volatility associated with investments in equities that simply isn't there with the safer assets that V is talking about earlier. However, on a practical and implementation level, the real world is that most people that are in their 40s or 50s and even 60s and trying to save for retirement simply can't get to reach all of their goals by investing in very low volatility, quote unquote, safe investments. Many of them need to have an allocation to equities in their portfolio. And I think it's that's what they have to do in order to get to their goals. And the key point is that they simply have to understand that they are under, you know, they are assuming additional risk in the form of volatility in equities. But for many people, it's a necessary evil and it's required for them to meet their goals.
Mm. For the longest time, though, I mean, I think sort of when I became, when I came into the adult world and sort of became aware of the idea of investing, the conventional wisdom was always that if you invest wisely, if you distribute your investments across a wide basket of investments and hold on to it for 10 or 20 years, that you'd do fine, that it was almost guaranteed that you would do fine. And in the 70s, the 80s and 90s seem to have borne that out. What happened?
Well, you should have started out your adult life in the 70s as I did.
Right, okay.
Because then you would have known what risk is. Okay.
So you're saying the 80s and 90s was an aberration?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It wasn't an aberration. It was a 20-year period of boom. And that's a nice long period. But how about the 70s? You know, let's take the decade on each side of those two decades, right? The 70s sucked. If you had started out at the beginning with $100,000, let's say, you were lucky to end the decade with $100,000 if you had invested in equities, okay? And you probably wound up behind. And I'm talking about adjusted for inflation, you almost surely were behind at the end of the decade. The same thing is true for the decade from 2000 to 2010. So what do we have? What do we learn from this? We learn that there are long periods of time when you can do really lousy. Mm. And if you are close to retirement or you have just retired, you don't have a long horizon. Even if you live 30 years past retirement date, you're going to be taking money out every month. If the bad times occur just around retirement, you're going to run out of money very, very quickly.
So you would be recommending much more cautious investment the closer you get to retirement age, it sounds.
Yes,
like.
Depending on what your other assets are.
Sure.
You see, this is critical, and I include, and I'm going to emphasize this over and over again, that even for people who are 60 or 65, they've still got most of them, if they're healthy, still have another good 10 or 20 years of human capital left, mm-hmm, if they choose to use it to earn more money. Now, if they hate their jobs, I can understand why they would want to retire as quickly as possible.
So if they're embracing that pure idea of retirement where I'm just not going to work anymore, they've got something else to think about.
First of all, who would want that unless you really, you know, are looking forward to being on the golf course or playing Mahjong all the time? Or, you know, go down to Florida, right, southern Florida, and see what people do. It's, to my mind, for the most part, it's not an attractive lifestyle. Now, you know, that depends on who you are, obviously.
Let's get a couple of callers in here. And Cheryl, I'm going to come to you in a second. I just want to put this number out, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK to talk about investments after yesterday's unsettling stock market drop. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Quincy. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Go ahead. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'm just concerned that your panelists are overlooking the fact that if you buy treasuries over any 20-year period you care to name, you will have less buying power in your portfolio at the end of that 20 years than you did at the start. You will be losing buying power over time buying treasuries. You can't keep up with inflation. And the stock market over any 20-year period, the S&P 500, over any 20-year period you pick, will have kept up with inflation, and I would like them to address those numbers.
Zee, I'm going to come to you, but I want to get Cheryl back into this conversation. Is Jim right, Cheryl?
Well, I'm more on the Jim side than I am on the Zee side. I am a firm believer in an equity tilt to portfolios. I think it's the only way in the long run to stay ahead of inflation and for most people to obtain and reach their retirement goals. So, yes, I do believe healthy allocation to equities is required. And, you know, Zvi was just talking about how people can continue to work into retirement, and that would be great if people are fortunate enough to have jobs that they love and can continue on to. But what I'm finding in the, you know, working with clients is there's either health concerns or they've been laid off from jobs, and there's a lot of late 50 and early 60 people that can't find jobs to support themselves. So they really do need to, you know, they're in a different situation than, you know, a tenured professor might be, for example, because their human capital is greatly diminished.
Sure. And Zvi, respond to Jim, who was talking
I think that Jim's got his facts wrong, but let's not even look at history. Let's just take 30-year I-bonds that you can buy today. Does Jim think the U.S. Treasury is going to default on bonds issued today?
Jim,
that's my question.
All right, let's bring Jim back up. Jim, did you get that question?
I'm not worried about default.
Okay, then if that's the
inflation.
Great. So what you should know about are 30-year I bonds, Series I bonds. They are now paying, these are bonds that the Treasury started issuing. These are small denomination bonds for savers, for ordinary savers. The maximum you can buy in any 1 year is $10,000. Most Americans don't save $10,000 a year, so they're not up against a limit, right? Right now, those bonds are guaranteed to keep pace with inflation. The interest that they are earning right now, of this, every 6 months it's adjusted for inflation. Starting from May through this November, the interest rate on these bonds is 4.6%, because inflation in the previous 6 month period was going at that rate. Where in the world can you invest for 6 months now guaranteed to beat inflation and earn 4.6%? And these are tax deferred. These are savings bonds that you. So my point is, most people are not being given basic information that would enable them to beat inflation with no risk.
So there's a recommendation for I bonds. Let's take a couple more calls. Speaking of people looking for information, Milton is calling from New Bedford. Hi, Milton.
Hi. Good afternoon. I love the show. I have a question. I happen to be in a pretty good position. My wife and I have saved up about $100,000. That we don't need for a long time. I'm 37 and she's 35. We're planning for our retirement. I used to invest in real estate. That's kind of fallen out of favor. And then I did invest in the market for a little while. Now I'm a little concerned about that. Does your panel have some advice on $100,000 that I will not need for about 30 years?
Cheryl Costa, simple question for Milton. What does he do with $100,000?
My vote is a diversified portfolio of small and large cap stocks. I would also include market neutral assets, international assets, a small allocation to real estate, probably in the form of real estate investment trusts, and of course an allocation to fixed income. But by and large, at 37 and saving that amount for retirement, my vote is a diversified portfolio with a very definite equity tilt.
Milton, thanks very much for that call. Zvi, do you want to chime
in
there?
I do. Yeah,
go ahead.
Because I start from the other end of the spectrum. I say, first of all, you can invest it safely, okay, or you can take risk. How do you feel about taking risk with that money? How would you feel if at the end of 30 years it was worth a lot less than it is now?
Yeah. Let's go to Kyle, who's calling from Framingham. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well. What's
so
on
really
your...
quickly,
yeah.
I'm 23 years old. I put in about $5,000 to a mutual fund a few years ago, and I've lost a significant amount of it. And I was just curious now what my options are and what's probably the good thing to do. I mean, it was meant for a long-term savings and to be pulled out, you know, later in life kind of thing. But I'm curious now what I should do with it.
Cheryl.
I would first find out what you mean by you'll need it later. I mean, if you're talking about you might want to buy a house in a couple of years, my answer is significantly different than if you're saying this really is retirement money and there's no way, no how I'm touching it until I'm 60. So that's a very important factor here. So you need to specify when it is that you're going to need this money and for what purpose. And if it really is anything less than 5 to 7 years, you know, I'd be tempted to move it more conservatively, because if you're going to need that money, you know, we don't know where the market's going in the short term. Nobody does. So time frame is really what you need to look at.
Thanks, Kyle, for that call. Let me read something that's on our website. Toy Yoda writes on our website, what do, that is T-O-Y-Y-O-D-A, okay?
Yeah,
it's not
right.
The car company, Toyota. What do your guests think of commodities? Gold has been up every year for 15 years with a brief dip during the 2008 meltdown. Zvi?
Yeah, I say stay away from it. Or let's put it like this. Be aware that this is a very risky asset. And gold does not produce any income stream, unlike stocks that produce dividends.
On the other hand, if you had bought a whole bunch of gold in 2008, you'd be in pretty good shape today,
yeah,
right?
That is true. Look, I can always show you some speculative investment that has performed well.
Yeah. Cheryl?
All of our portfolios, or a good portion of them, have an allocation to commodities, but it would be a very small allocation, less than 5%. They can be risky, but as part of a diversified portfolio, they tend to help the portfolio out. So we include commodities, but at a very small allocation level.
Zvi, let me ask you, when you talk about the risk premium of investing in the stock market, you know, if you invested in some of the most widely held names, big companies, big blue chip companies like Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, to name a few, aren't there dividends? I mean, they're paying dividends that are more than a 10-year treasury does pay in interest. So I'm still trying to understand, you know.
Yeah, but you don't know what they're going to be worth when you need to liquidate them.
Sure.
That's the problem. The difference is that with a long-term treasury, inflation-protected treasury bond, you have the full faith and credit of the American people that at the maturity date, you're going to get your original principal back plus full compensation for inflation.
About that, Simply Monica writes on our website, and here's a question for you, Zvi. When you say that the I bond is inflation adjusted, can you explain what that means? Don't bonds pay a set amount of interest?
No. These bonds pay a set amount of interest adjusted for inflation, and that happens to be zero. Okay, that we call that the real interest rate. And in the case of I bonds, it's the promised fixed rate. But the amount credited to your account every 6 months, actually they do it monthly, but they change the rate every 6 months to reflect what inflation was over the previous 6 months. So you don't get any cash, you just get interest that is enough to compensate you for the increase in the consumer price level.
Mm, okay. All right. I think that answers Monica's question. Cheryl, here's my concern. When I think about the risk associated with investing in the stock market, it just seems that there are so many factors that are out of our control. I mean, for instance, we're talking about concern about European debt right now. How do we adjust for that? How do we take precautions about factors that are even not only, I mean, Washington is bad enough. These are things that are going on thousands and thousands of miles away from us. How do we account for that and still invest safely?
Right. There's certainly a lot of uncertainty on the horizon. You know, the downgrade was an issue. The turmoil in the European markets is an issue. Unemployment is still high. I mean, pick your poison. There's a million things you could be worrying about at any given moment. And the hard part is you don't know what the next big surprise is going to be. It's very difficult to protect your portfolio from things you don't have any insight into. And you can be convinced that interest rates are going higher or inflation is going higher, and you can take what you think are prudent steps to address those concerns in your portfolio, but it might not ever materialize. And then you've unnecessarily restricted the portfolio. So you kind of have to be able to say there's going to be some uncertainty and I have to be able to roll with it.
All right. And with that, I'm going to thank you both for coming in. Cheryl Costa, Managing Director for AFW Wealth Advisors in Framingham, thanks so much for coming in and offering your advice and your take on what's going on. Zvi Bodie, Professor of Finance and Economics at Boston University School of Management. He's author of the upcoming book, Risk Less and Prosper, Your Guide to Safer Investing. Zvi Bodie, thanks so much. What a pleasure.
Thanks. Can I plug my video series?
In about 5 seconds.
All right. Just go to svbodie.com
and
click on
And click on that, and there it is.
You can hear how to invest safely.
And the latest word from Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 178 points, and that's just since we began talking. So I'd like to think that we had a positive effect on that. Listeners, stay with us. Up next, new federal guidelines on insurance and contraception are making many women reconsider a once problematic form of birth control. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.